Big news! This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which flight deals are actually deals and which are clickbait. They'll also tell you when to skip the bundle and book separately. Plus, how to avoid paying for upgrades that you won't use. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Fromer Travel Show. I'm your host, Pauline Fromer. We get to travel orally all over the world on this podcast. But my next guest is going to talk about a country that we've only given light coverage to. I'm talking about the country of Jordan in the Middle East. My next guest is James Hammond. He is the host of the marvelous travel podcast, Winging It Travel. James, welcome to the Fromer Travel Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing really well. So what was the inspiration to take a much deeper dive than most people do into the country of Jordan?
Yeah. So for people who are wondering why in the Middle East, this was in 2023. So things have happened since then, as we all know.
Sure.
But I still think it's true to the case that I think it's the safest country, or at least in the top two or three, to travel. So if you're thinking about Middle East,
in that place, region.
In that region. If you're thinking maybe dipping your toes into that region, I went to Jordan, we went to Oman, which is another one, which is okay as well. So I think these two are on our list, and Jordan has more attractions that maybe we're all familiar with, which we'll get to later in the podcast. But
right. Yeah,
safety, ease of travel. Good roads, because we road tripped it for 2 weeks, and they speak English. And yeah, it seemed to be like the perfect place for 2 weeks.
Right. And, you know, in our old Israel book, which we haven't been selling much of lately.
I imagine.
Yeah, we had a chapter on going to Petra, because that had been the most common side trip from Israel. And for those who don't know about Petra, you have seen it in the Indiana Jones movie. It's that incredible desert. I don't know what do we call it? Incredible desert city.
Yes.
At the height of, do you remember which Indiana Jones was it? Was it the Temple of Doom?
Yeah, Temple of Doom. Yeah.
Yeah. Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom. He comes up upon this rock face, and carved into it, chiseled into it, is this extraordinary building. And he goes inside, and wacky things happen, I think with snakes and other things. And because of that, Petra became a major tourist site. So let's talk about that first, because I think that is the reason a lot of people go to Jordan nowadays. So Petra, is it all that?
Do you know what? You're thinking of words to describe it. And I like this because it is actually hard to describe, because it's incredible. I actually don't know how to describe it. It's like a building carved into rock.
Right.
It is that incredible. So Petra is 100% worth the hype. But there are some key points that you should know to help your trip and make it seem a little bit better. First of all, when you get into Jordan, you're going to have to choose if you want to buy the Jordan Pass. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's three layers to a Jordan Pass, and this gets you entry into 40 attractions across the country and 1, 2, or 3 days in Petra. So they're kind of divided into like quirky names called Jordan Wanderer, Jordan Explorer, Jordan Expert. We chose the Jordan Explorer, which gives you 2 consecutive days in Petra. If you really want to dive in and do all the trails, then choose Jordan Expert. And for people who are wondering what the price are, I think it's about $1.4 to 1 JOD, which is their current currency. So the Jordan Explorer now is 75 JOD. So that's going to be roughly around, $100? Uh-huh.
And that gets you entry. So can you not just show up at Petra? Is this a place that they are trying to keep the crowds in manageable numbers?
True. You can turn up on the day and buy your ticket, but I think that's like half the price of this Jordan Pass. Maybe even more. So I don't think it's worth the value if you're going to stay in Jordan for a week, say, because you probably want to get the pass and go to other attractions across the country. So you can do it both ways,
So just to describe what Petra is, it isn't just that one famous rock building. It's an entire city, right? Can you give our listeners a bit of a pressy on what Petra is?
Yeah, so you walk through the gates, which is obviously a very touristy bit. You've got restaurants at the front, and then you start walking this walkway, and this path just weaves in and around the city carved into rocks. And the treasury that we talk about all the time is one part of this, very small part, the famous part. But it's like you're walking through very narrow alleyways through rock formations, and you weave around and in and out, and you get to an end point, which I think is called the Valley of the Kings at the end. But that's about 5 to 6 kilometer walk. So I think the basics here is you can do that. So you walk along the main, it's called the main trail. You walk along the main trail, and off here are things to see and do, right? So that's the basics. And the reason people take 2 or 3 days is off this trail are other trails into the hills. So you can walk along these trails depending on how fit you are. It's going to be hot. Also, it's going to be very, very sunny. Like, you probably need a hat and you've got to have sun cream. And so all depends on your capability. Yeah.
Now, when you see that Indiana Jones movie, one of the things that's so striking is often when you're looking at buildings created centuries ago, they're in ruins, and yet this one looks very much intact. Mm. Is the entire city intact, or is most of it ruins? And do you need a guide with you to help explain what you're seeing?
Okay, so a guide is not mandatory, so you can walk in by yourself. There are potential scams as you walk in, so you need to be careful. People might offer their horse to ride you through, or camel. Just say no, just go through with your ticket. That's at the start. And then once you get through, I mean, if you really want to know all the information, of course you should have a guide. We didn't. So next time we go, I would 100% have a guide to explain stuff. But no need for a guide. And I think when you go through, it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking just to look at things that are amazing and incredible, you probably don't need a guide, because you're like, wow, there's something there. There's an amphitheater over here. Temple. And most of it is intact. And there's ruins as you go at the end towards the main trail and up into the hills of the whole city, if you like. But the treasury, which we all know is the picture of Petra, if you like, that is so well preserved. And you can actually, there's a cordon, you can't go on it. So you are kept far away from the actual carved out building in the rock. So that is why it's protected. But before that is hordes of people. So, but my top tip for seeing the treasury, I think it opens at 7 a.m. Petra as a site. Mm-hmm. Get between 7 and 8:30, because the tour buses will arrive at 8:30. That's when it starts busy. So if you're an early bird, get your breakfast in, be the coolest part of the day, go for a walk, and all the scam people, all the Bedouins and all the local people who work there are not up yet. They don't really start working until 8:30, because that's when the tour buses come in. Access to the treasury with no one there. So go early, 7 to 8 a.m., walk through, you'll see a few tourists, but honestly, it's so worth it just to see this thing with nothing in your picture.
This sounds like the advice is similar to the advice we always give for the Vatican. If you don't buy the extra money things to go before it's open to tourists, we always say, go first thing in the morning and zoom right to the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
And then go back and explore the others. So is it the same with Petra? Zoom to the treasury and then make your way back as the crowds are going in the opposite direction.
Yes. And we did this twice, right? So the first day we didn't get into the city around Petra till maybe late morning. So we went midday crazy. So right, next morning, we're going to go early. So next morning, we got the picture at ground level. And then we took a walk up. There's a little cafe over the treasury, which is a bit of a trek up some steps, probably 45 minutes. You can take the Al Kupta Trail from the Royal Tombs. So you go to the end of the main trail where the Royal Tombs are. You climb up the steps, steady climb. Then you get to like a little shorter path. and you'll find this Bedouin run cafe, and they serve like coffee and tea and drinks, but the view over the top of Petra and the treasury is incredible. And the view of the treasury, that bit you carve into the rock that people know, that is honestly like a prime real estate he's got there. He's got like a little cafe on the edge of the rock, so don't go too close to the edge.
Right.
But you, I'll send you a picture, and maybe you can share with your listeners if they're keen to know what it looks like. But you do literally sit on the mat with a drink. You sort of turn your head, get the picture, and the treasury is right there.
Yeah.
So that's a top tip if you're willing to hike up a little bit for about 30 to 45 minutes.
So it's worth it. You probably get more of a panoramic view on the top and can actually see the features better.
Yeah.
So you said at the beginning, if I return, would you return? Is it worth going for another day, or should you have taken the 3 days rather than the two to begin with, do you think? Is there enough to see and do?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there is a ridiculous amount of trails to go and see and do. If you go onto the Jordan Tourism website for Petra, I think there's like 50 or 60 maps on there. there's a ridiculous amount of trails other than the main trail. So there's always stuff to go and see and do. I think the problem we had was we went in, must have been April, so it's quite hot. And I think if you're going to go sort of approaching summer, you've got to bear in mind the weather is so hot. I mean, if you can do a whole day in that weather, you know, be it. But I think for the first half a day, we're like, okay, this is going to be tough. So we only really had, I'd say, a day and a half, not even 2 days. Yeah, so I think I'll go back in a cooler climate and go for another day and do some other trails around here.
Right. All right, so Petra, was that the highlight of the trip, or were there other highlights?
Is it cliche to say it is a highlight? No, it is a highlight. I'm going to have to say yes, because we saw the treasury in early morning and from a height. I don't think you can beat that.
Right,
for Petra and for Jordan.
But you did go to Wadi Rum, which is almost as famous. So tell our listeners what Wadi Rum is.
Wadi Rum is a huge, huge desert in Jordan, which Bedouins live in. So the idea here is you can book an overnight camping stay in Wadi Rum. You get to the little village, the little town, and there's so many tour operators that do this, but we picked one. And we stay for 2 days, one night. And the idea is you drive in a Jeep and you just go in. It seems like endless sand. you walk up and down sand dunes. You climb rocks to see the viewpoints as far as the eye can see. So Wadi Rum is this huge plot of land that's just like golden sand and sand dunes. And people live in this as well, which is pretty incredible.
So did you get a feeling of how people survive amidst all this sand? Was there any education on the Bedouins and their lifestyle?
Yeah, so the Bedouins, it depends how traditional they are. So they can either live in the town, which is like the Wadi Rum village, if you like, which is obviously like a normal town with amenities, right? But some do live in the desert. And the way they live in the desert is in Wadi Rum and lots of places in Jordan or Oman, is you find these little oases just plotted in the middle of these deserts, which is their water resource.
Huh.
So they can survive with that. They have camels. So they obviously ride camels a lot to take them to places across the whole desert. And for food, it's an interesting one that they must just be able to go on their camels and go to the town to get food, right? Because I don't know what survives in the desert. There's not much going on, right?
So even at the oases, they're not growing food.
Not much, no. It's just like probably pools of water in the palm trees. A classic image that comes to your mind, what you think of an oasis, is that.
Huh.
It's like a little break from the harshness of the desert. So yeah, they can go there to wash their clothes and obviously collect water. But for food, I imagine nowadays they probably just go to the town and collect the meat and the vegetables that they need and the vegetable and all like the cooking stuff like oil and stuff, I imagine they use, and butter and stuff like that.
Right, right. Yeah.
So we had like a mix of seeing that, but also staying at a camp where we're in the middle of absolute nowhere. And it's, I don't know, the thing I think about the most about Wadi Rum is, can you imagine silence, like pure silence? Have you ever experienced that? Have you?
I once tried this thing called an isolation tank.
Oh, yes.
Where you float on highly salted water in this coffin-like structure, and it was deep silence, and I found it so disturbing that I don't think I made it more than 10 minutes in the tank. I just got incredibly claustrophobic. It felt like death to me. I'm hoping the Wadi Rum silence is more pleasant.
It's just so vast, right? It's so huge. There's just these valleys everywhere, and you feel so small. I mean, you do feel like you are literally in the middle of nowhere, and it takes quite a while to go from the town to the camp, right? And you think, where are we going? Because you don't see anything in the distance. You just see sand, right?
Right.
On your Jeep. But you sit on the back of the Jeep, you just take the air in, you just admire the views, and it's quite unique compared to where I'm from. So we absolutely loved the experience. And the Bedouin guide we had, they're so fun and so inquisitive about where we're from, and they want to know how we thought of Jordanians and also about Bedouin people, how we thought they lived. They gave us lunch, a classic mat on the sand in the shade by a rock, and had a nice vegetarian lunch. So all incredible, really, yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but did Wadi Rum gain notoriety because it was another movie set? I seem to remember that some of Lawrence of Arabia was filmed there, that wonderful film with Peter O'Toole. Is that correct?
Yep, Lawrence of Arabia and I think Star Wars.
Dune
and Star Wars, maybe The Rise of Skywalker, maybe. I'm not a film buff, but I think that was filmed there as well.
Yeah. So those were probably two of the more famous places you went, but you were there for an extended road trip. So where did you start and what were the different places you went to besides those two famous ones?
Okay, yeah. So we started in the capital city, Amman, and I'm going to put a caveat here. We're actually there during Ramadan. So this was an interesting experience because I think Wadi Rum, the night we stayed, was the last day of Ramadan. So they had like a big feast and party going into the morning after, right? So that was quite an interesting experience.
Did that mean it was hard to get lunch? Because I know the fast is broken at sundown each day. What did you do for breakfast and lunch?
Yeah, so I think on the general streets in Jordan, very hard. And we found in the capital that there may be the odd cafe that would serve only tourists during the day. Mm. But they'd bring down a shutter and sort of put you in the corner and give you some soup. Not the most extensive options, maybe a soup and a coffee or a tea. And they kind of explain, look, we just want to sort of hide you away a little bit because it's Ramadan and we're not eating or drinking. So, but we're allowed to serve tourists.
Right.
So that's day one. And we quickly realized, okay, maybe we shouldn't do this. So what we did is we joined in the iftar meals in the evening, which is obviously their celebration after the day of not eating or drinking. And we went in those times to the shops to get snacks for the day.
Huh.
So we had the breakfast in the morning really early before sunrise, if you can, and then obviously a late dinner. And we kind of respected those rules as we went through the country. The only caveat is in hotels, like big hotels, maybe like Hilton hotels and stuff like that, they would serve food to the guests during the day.
So I asked you to describe the whole thing, but now I'm interested in what was Amman like?
Yeah, it's called the City of Seven Hills, isn't it? So hilly. So it goes up and down all the time.
Like San Francisco.
Yeah, similar vibe, right? And they've got this amazing Roman ruins near the city center of Amman, which we walked to amazingly, and it overlooks the city, and it has the amphitheater next to it.
Interesting.
Amman was great, very cosmopolitan, very great vibe, like lots of streets that are quite happening. Lots of restaurants.
So skyscrapers? Does it look modern?
No.
Or does it look more from the past?
More traditional. Yeah.
Okay. But so almost were there like kasbahs? Were there marketplaces?
Kasbahs, marketplaces, little souks, and also cafes like built into rocks because obviously the hills and stuff, right? So it's kind of city modernized but built amongst the old stuff. So no skyscrapers, no like big grand buildings that are like modern design. I actually don't recall seeing anything like that. It's just the old Roman ruins in amongst the newer buildings that are in rocks and in the hills. So an incredible experience.
Was it friendly?
Very friendly, yeah. 100%, yeah. Got my hair cut there. So went next door to my guest house and
How was the haircut? Did they do a good job?
He did, yeah. Very, very good job. And I knew some Arabic, maybe 10 words. So maybe 20 words, maybe two or three sentences. So I tried to speak the initial conversation in Arabic, and that really gets you in to get their trust and also for them to help you out if you need.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so you were in Amman for how many days?
I think 3 nights, yeah.
And was that appropriate or too long, too short?
I wouldn't spend anything more, no.
Okay.
One night just to acclimatize from the airport and stuff, and then two days and two nights just to go and see the sights of Amman. Yeah.
Right. So Amman, and what followed Amman?
Went to a place called Jerash. They have a huge, huge Roman ruins there. And it's like a big hippodrome style, epic site.
What's hippodrome style? I don't think I know what that means.
You know, back in the day, what's a modern day example? You know, NASCAR? They drive around in that sort of...
Oh, sure.
That shape. Yeah, okay. imagine the old school.
They had chariot racing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so lots of columns, lots of like huge buildings, amphitheaters, and like a hippodrome as well, where it's like a oval shape type, I guess. But this place is huge. Like, this is so big. We probably could have spent 2 days there, but we only had one day. So we booked a night. I think it's called the Blue Hostel. But the town around Jerash is very conservative. So this is the first time I think we saw... Amman is quite cosmopolitan, maybe modern. Yeah, like lots of young people there. But I think Jerash and the town around it, quite conservative. People in headdress. I remember no one staying there. People just go there for the day to do the site and then leave.
Oh, interesting.
So we walked through the town. And
so in the evenings, you were probably one of the few tourists left.
Didn't see anyone. Yeah. And you get that kind of look like, oh, you're here. Like, why are you here?
You're saying we. Who were you traveling with?
My partner, Emma.
Oh, okay. Did she have to cover her head?
I think she did, out of respect, yeah. You don't have to. But because it's so sunny and warm, you'd want to cover anyway because the sun would be beating down on your head, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So after Jerash, where'd you go?
We went to Ajlun. It's a place right at the top of the country. It's got a castle and it overlooks olive fields and greenery, and it looks like you're in the Mediterranean.
Wow. And so the reason you go is to explore the castle there.
Yes, it's a quick 2 to 3 hours. Yeah.
Okay. And then what was next?
We went to Dana Biosphere. So Dana is a reserve in the country, Dana, if people want to check it out. It's an incredible village. And on, next to the village, you've got these little eco lodges that you can book, and they're perched on top of the hill. And overlooking from the window of your tent is this huge reserve that goes down and as far as the eye can see. So what we did is we booked 2 nights. I think the guy was called Omar, who booked us in. Really nice guy. The first day we did a walking tour with a guide, a Bedouin guide, in an area next to the biosphere. And then the day after, we did a 16-kilometer walk, hike through the biosphere.
So what type of biosphere? I mean, you know, it could be a marsh, it could be a desert, it could be a forest. What made it a biosphere?
That is a great question. It's the largest nature reserve in Jordan, but it's actually sort of founded quite late. I think it was only founded 20 to 30 years ago.
Huh.
So I don't think it's actually like a new attraction in term. An old attraction compared to the rest. But it's got like a rich biodiversity, right? So you can experience nature. It's like walking through a desert. It really was. But then you've got like columns of rocks with trees on top, and you might find like one random tree as you walk past it. Like, how is that surviving? I had no idea what this place was when I went there. And someone said, oh, you've got to walk through it because it's unlike anything we've seen. So we booked put the hike through, and we walked down.
So it sounds like it was notable for its rock formations.
Yeah. Dried riverbeds, rock formations, the valley either side. So you're in the valley, you're literally at the bottom by the riverbed, and beside you is this huge like rock formations, right?
You're describing it kind of like some of the parks of the American West, like Arches National Park, where you go into this area and just the rocks are like skyscrapers all around you and very interestingly carved by the wind, often rust colored or gold or it's almost like you're in God's sculpture garden. Is it somewhat like that?
Yeah. And I think there must have been a river, right, in the early days carving this all the way through. And then obviously now it's too dry and it's too hot, but it's like completely huge. Like, I couldn't believe the scale of it. Huh. And when I was walking through, I was like, I don't think I've been anywhere where there's no one here. There's only 3 of us walking. We had a extra person. And I don't really know what I'm seeing apart from your tree, the rock formations and the valley. But this just goes on forever. And you get to the end point. It does reach a desert at the end because there's a lodge as you approach the end where we got picked up from.
Huh.
It's called Fainan Lodge. It's quite well known. So that's your end point. But for that 16 kilometers, it's quite flat, like an easy walk in terms of trajectory, but
sure,
blisteringly hot and just walking through rocks and a dry riverbed.
Interesting.
And pure silence as well. I couldn't believe the silence, yeah.
And you also went to the Dead Sea in the course of your trip.
Yeah, Dead Sea is fairly near Dana Biosphere, so you could probably do those two together. We didn't stay because it's quite expensive, but you can book a day pass in any of the hotels. It costs about 20 to 30 euros, I think, or dollars. So what we did is we booked one of the hotels for an afternoon, which gives you access to their beach. So you can go and sit in the water and float.
Right.
And then you have access to their amenities like the restaurant and the pool. And so we had an afternoon in a bit of luxury for not too bad a value. But I can't swim, right? So I was really nervous. I was like, I don't trust
I'm
going
to
float
here. Swim. There's no way you're going under that water, right?
I didn't believe it. So I was like, well, I'm going to try this out. And then there's a video of me like really casually getting into the water and I let myself go. And yeah, you do float. So it's true.
Oh, that's very funny. And what did you think? Was it a good experience to be floating there?
Yeah, I would stay around the area if I had, if I went back to Jordan. So I'd have an extra day in Petra for sure. And I'd have one or two nights by the Dead Sea. I quite like it, yeah.
And the food, kebabs, couscous, I mean, typical Middle Eastern food, hummus.
Hummus, chickpeas, lentil soups.
How does it compare? Have you been to Israel? How does it compare? Or Egypt?
No, I've been to Lebanon. It's pretty much like Lebanese food. Yeah.
Okay.
So a lot of, I guess, wraps and meats, like roasted meats. Because we were there for Ramadan, what you find in Ramadan is that a la carte menus are off the menu. It's just buffet because they want to eat as much as possible, right? So when you go into a restaurant, you pay $10 and that is just a buffet of all you can eat. And honestly, the selection is incredible. It is like what you just labeled here, all the chickpeas, lentils, wraps, salads, but all the meats, obviously apart from pork. So you got all the beef, lamb, chicken, rice, yogurts.
To sum up, what was the most surprising thing about going to Jordan for you?
I think the hospitality, because like I said, we chose somewhere to go to in the Middle East for the first time in the region. It's the first time. I actually went to Lebanon before that for 10 days. So that was a completely different experience. But what was connected with those two is the hospitality. And I think the hospitality and the people are absolutely incredible. I never experienced anything like it. They would go out of your way to make sure you're okay. Huh. I mentioned the Dana Biosphere. The guy who owns it is like walking around, making sure everyone's okay. Like, can I book anything for you? I've got trusted guides. Like, he really was so nice. I trust him 100%. So I think the hospitality and the people were great. And the cafes, I love my coffee. Lots of great coffee in Jordan. So the cafes we tried to seek out, all the cafe owners are quite nice and quirky. And they talk to you about their life and stuff. So
I think people are often surprised by the incredible graciousness of the hospitality in the Middle East, but it's a tradition that's gone back centuries. But yeah, it's a very deep-rooted hospitality. I think it's very much part of the culture, and it's a beautiful thing.
Unbelievable. And I think they've got a mix of people there, right? People think Jordanians are just one type. Well, no, you've got Bedouins. You've got the guys that probably come from the Romans, effectively, like in the cities, right? They're not Bedouins. You have lots of Palestinian population there, because I think it's the second biggest, I think. Demographic there. So we've got all these different types of people who are made Jordan this country, and together they create this amazing atmosphere of warmth and humility. And yeah, they're willing to help you out. And if you can speak 10 to 15 words of Arabic, just hello, how are you, thank you, it honestly does go a long way there. And it's the same for any Middle East country, I think. You speak Arabic to them, they're really surprised you're speaking their language, and they just love it. They honestly appreciate it.
How wonderful. Well, thank you so much for bringing Jordan to life. Really appreciate it, James.
Thank you.
And that is it for today's Fromer's Travel Show. I thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, may I wish you a hearty bon voyage.
Watching cable. all the channels seem the same. Trying to remember all the songs we like to play, 'cause those lazy afternoons don't come so frequently these days. Oh, it's been so long, and I cannot help but wonder, are you ever coming home? I like you with your sour candy in the boat house on the lake. Oh, but I hate the way it tastes. I can't get you off of my
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I, I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.